You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hey, 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 hello, welcome back. Welcome back. It's great to have you here. Hope you're having a fantastic time, whatever it is you're up to. I know we're going to have a fantastic time here because this lady, my guest this week, is someone I've known for quite a while now, and it's taken us a little bit of time to actually be able to get our schedules and our diaries to coincide so we can actually do this. She is a very busy woman these days, and I know I know you're going to get a lot out of this. We're going to explore her story and her journey. It's going to make for a fascinating episode. So who is my guest today? My guest, she's co-founder of Always Awesome. That's OARSOME. Gives you a clue as to what she likes doing there. She's a co-founder of Always Awesome. She's the MD of One Networking. She's a rower. She's a cat servant, a daughter, sister, auntie, godmother, a carer. She is passionate about happiness, about making a positive difference, and about supporting people to be the best they can be. That's my guest today, Jen Hines. Hey, Jen, how are you doing?
Hey, Keith, I'm really good. I'm so excited to be here with you. Keith Blakemore Noble invited me on his show. How cool is that?
Well, think of it from my perspective, the Jen Hines, MD of One Networking, agreed to come on the show. How fantastic is that? So, yeah. I mean, we've heard your bio. It's a lovely bio. Nice, concise bio. I really like that. Particularly the cat servant. I think you've encapsulated cats there neatly. Anyone who has cats will know immediately where you're coming from with that. Anyone who doesn't have cats is thinking, oh, crazy. But if you have cats, you'll know exactly what she means. So we've heard that, but other than cat servant extraordinaire, who is Jen Hines? Who is the lady behind the bio?
That's a very good question, Keith. And crikey, where does one start with a question like that? Do you want me to start most recent or the very beginning? I'm not going to start at the beginning because that will show how old I am, which is dead old, by the way. But
21.
Yeah, who was that? What? 21?
Yeah. She's 21.
Absolutely right. Yeah, so I'm a 21-year-old that's achieved a lot in those 21 years. Yeah, just a normal Northwest girl. I'm from the Northwest of England. I've not always lived here. I've lived here until about the age of 17. Then I went to France for a bit. Then I've travelled around the world like that. What was it like that? Can't remember. Like that. I think we went around that way. I lived in France for 3 years, three separate years. I went to uni. No, I didn't. I went to poly. I graduated from uni. It was one of those, I don't know if you remember.
That was during the John Major years, wasn't it, when he upgraded lots of polys to unis?
Yeah, see, I like to think it was the Queen that did it. I was going to say the Queen upgraded.
Well, yes, the Queen did it, yes.
Yes. She upgraded a load of towns to cities, and those that had polys, they were... And we were the first, Sunderland, great, well-renowned establishment of education.
Yeah.
Sunderland Polytechnic became the University of Sunderland. And that's so really? I went to poly, graduated from uni. How cool is that?
Nice.
Yeah, and then I've lived all over the UK since graduating on doing various jobs. Became self-employed in 2001, I do believe. And then, yeah, kind of... been doing all sorts in a self-employed status ever since, really.
Cool. So what did you do before you became self-employed? Kind of what was life like?
The majority of my employed years were in marketing and communications and PR, that kind of thing. So that was kind of like, so I finished uni a couple of years out because adulting wasn't something I wanted to rush into. I'm still not planning to do it anytime soon. So I did. I went on a graduate trainee scheme with Walker Snack Foods, no less, which basically involved, it was a graduate trainee scheme. It basically involved having a Peugeot 405 estate, and the estate bit was constantly full of boxes of crisps. It was like the dream job because I adore crisps. And that was literally the job. And going around southwest London to little retail outlets and getting them to swap out Golden Wonder Crisp for Walker's Crisp. That was my job, basically. So that's when I started. Then I went on to then I changed from that to another graduate trainee scheme with an insurance company. And with these graduate trainee schemes, you do a bit in claims, a bit in underwriting, a bit in all kinds of things. And I did a bit in marketing and never left, really. So that's from there. I worked in marketing and PR for them. Marketing, in fact, I worked for them then until I was made redundant in 2001.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
So a couple of different graduate schemes there with different companies. I mean, how did you find them? I know some people absolutely love them. Some people find that you're basically a glorified skivvy. I mean, how did you find them useful? What do you think is the biggest lessons, the biggest things that you got from those positions?
For the first one, crisps. Genuinely, excuse me. Choking on them just at the memory of them. The first one, I didn't get as much from, and the reason I left it was because it was after the initial training, it was quite a lonely job because it was just driving around in a car.
Got it, yeah.
Different outlets. So it didn't really tick my social boxes, if you like. Mm-hmm. But the second one with the insurance company, that I really enjoyed that because you genuinely got, I can't remember how long, it's a long time ago. I can't remember how long you got in each department, but you mm-hmm. really got a great overview of the company and you were mostly given decent things to do because it was insurance, you also had to do professional exams alongside it. So you were given quite good responsibility.
Yeah.
It's a really good group of people. So, and you kind of start with a group of graduate trainees and you kind of do your journey with them then. So you do build up good friendships as well. I did enjoy the second one, and like I say, I was there for
a while.
I was there for some time.
And you ended up you went into PR. You said working PR for them.
Yeah, so communications and PR manager, I think, was my title, and I covered their UK branch and their French branch. So I actually lived in France for them. I spent quite a lot of time in France, actually, back in the day. But I had a all expenses paid apartment in Montparnasse in Paris. So that was
Oh, nice! Very nice. Yeah, right. I was going to ask how did you said you had three different spells in France. I was going to ask how they came about. So was that through this job, or was that separate? Or
no. So the first one, so I did my A levels and took a year out. Then so I went over to France to be an au pair. I was an au pair for not very long because it did. I was an au pair in a lost town in the middle of nowhere initially. And that was awful because I was so homesick.
Yeah.
There was no social life for me. I lived in the cellar of this house, which I was locked in when I wasn't looking after the kids.
Oh,
and
Lord.
The kids were a nightmare. Sorry, I probably didn't know what I was doing looking after them. That'll be why. So I did that for about 6 weeks and then thought, no, I don't want to do this anymore. So then I moved to Lyon, which is a big city, mm-hmm. and did the same there. But again, reasons I won't go into, actually. I didn't do that for very long. That was to do with the dodgy things the mum was into. But anyway, so then I subscribed to a university over there that did a course for French for foreigners. And I did mm-hmm. that. And I taught kids or school children English to earn money. And I did that for the rest of the year. Absolutely loved that. That was brilliant. My first taste of independence in France. It was amazing. I lived I shared a flat with a Finnish lady, a Bolivian lady, a German lady, and there was somebody else. Austrian lady and me. So we all spoke a little bit of French with our different accents. But
yeah.
That was my first year in France. My second year in France was part of my degree. So my mm-hmm. degree was a 4-year sandwich course. I don't know if they still exist or if that's what they call, but sandwich course. And the third year was back in France. My boss is there, my four-legged boss is there. He might jump up and say hello and show his bottom.
Charm, lovely. We look forward to that.
it's beautiful, beautiful. Anyway, I went to France as part of my year out. So then I worked in a bank for some of it. I went to university for some of it as well with some of my uni friends. And then the third year out was after university, and I went and did a ski season. It wasn't quite a year. I did a ski season in the French Alps. So
Oh,
that was great too.
yeah, I bet. Great fun. Nice. I imagine your French vocabulary must have, or your ability to speak French must have skyrocketed by immersing yourself in these things.
It did then. Now I'm very rusty, but then I used to dream in French and everything. I struggled with English for a period, actually, one of those. But I still struggle with English, to be fair. But
yeah, you can't beat immersing yourself in something if you want to fully learn it.
Absolutely.
For some reason, I've got coming to mind now one episode of The Simpsons where they are exchange students, and Bart is out in France and living with some awful family, and it says all sorts of tales of woe and all this sort of thing, and he can't speak a word of French, and then he escapes from them and he says something, and he goes, "Incroyable, je parle français maintenant."
All of a sudden,
is that if you're immersed in something, whatever it is, you fully immerse yourself in it. That's the best way to learn it. You just
absolutely,
yeah, pick it all up. Beautiful,
definitely, yeah, definitely.
So anyway, aside from all your shenanigans in various parts of the world with multinational or a multi international group of you there. It must have sounded like the United Nations at some point with your talking with your different languages and accents. That must have been really cool.
It was cool.
Things moved on. You were doing your communications and PR for this company, and then the R word loomed, redundancy. So, I mean, I know for some people redundancy feels like the end of the world. For some people, it's just, oh, okay, it's another step. And for some people, it's like, wow, this is a massive new, this opens up all sorts of possibilities for me. So how was the redundancy for you? Just before we explore that in a little bit more detail, I wanted to say hello and a special thank you to our sponsor of this episode. It's Grow Radio from Gary Jones. Gary's put together something pretty special with Grow Radio. It brings you a different podcast on the hour, every hour. Whatever your taste, you'll find a podcast in there that fits your tastes. And if you just want a bit of background, just have Grow Radio playing. You never know what you're going to stumble upon. And yes, both of my podcasts will be on Grow Radio, of course. Launches September 2022. Check it out, growradio.uk. Now, what were we talking about? Ah, yes. And what happened?
Well, in retrospect, best thing that ever happened, absolutely, by far and away. At the time, it was the whole company was being made redundant because the company went into liquidation. Because of some dodgy dealings, actually. But anyway, I won't go into that. You know, you might watch this. Not mine, I hasten to add. But yeah, so the whole company went busted. So we kind of didn't have that much notice, but kind of knew it was coming. So the way I've always been quite a positive person and tried to, you know, see the good in things anyway. So as soon as I knew it was on the cards, I immediately started applying for jobs. And I was really fortunate that I got offered a couple of jobs actually in the same industry. So I had a couple of offers that I could choose to do when the inevitable happened. So I did that and I accepted one of them. But the real kind of gift that redundancy gave me was the fact that I've always really wanted to be my own boss. I've always really wanted to work for myself. But the job I had was well paid. The benefits were brilliant. It was secure in theory. So so I never had the guts, I suppose, to think, right, I'm going to walk away from this incredibly well paid at the time job with all this security to go and set something up on my own. So would I have done eventually? Maybe, but there was no way I would have done it up to that point. So when that happened, that was suddenly was like, whoa, this could be the chance. So I did take a job initially, but then I was offered a position which enabled me to go freelance. So it's kind of like having a dip in self-employment. Yeah. So I was still being paid a retainer, which was, to all intents and purposes, a wage. It was probably before IR35 or whatever it's called, when you can't do that anymore. But I was being paid a retainer that was fine every month. But I was a contractor rather than, or freelancer rather than an employee. So that I did that. So that then enabled me to do a bit of, it's like, oh, I could do a bit of work for this person as well then. So I took on a couple of extra people, and it kind of went from there to being employed, freelancer, to being self-employed, really. So it's looking, even at the time, I saw it as a, you know, it was sad in many ways because you were leaving the people behind, but it was, it just opened up so many opportunities that I probably wouldn't have pursued without the kick up the backside from redundancy.
Yeah. So it was that kick that you needed just to make the so you took a job and then used that to kind of transition over ultimately into fully self-employed. Looking back on it, if you knew then what you know now, is that the same? Would you have approached it the same way? Would you have done things differently? Or I mean, I know it's hard to say, but what do you feel?
I've never given that any thought, so therefore, without giving it any thought, I probably wouldn't do it any differently, because I took the first job I took kind of opened me up to other opportunities, I suppose. But because I mean, it was an okay job, but it was all right. But because I wasn't there particularly long before I was then offered this freelancing opportunity, it meant that I wasn't that connected with it, if you like. So it was no big deal when I decided to leave. So it gave me that, with the other job that I was made redundant from, I walking away from it, it wouldn't just be walking away from a job, it'd have been walking away from people, from, I guess, the comfort of knowing everything about that company. But then taking, I guess I did it gradually, and that probably gave me the confidence I needed rather than just going immediately self-employed, because we all know being self-employed is difficult, and you've got to pay those bills, and it's right over down to you then. So I probably wouldn't have done it differently in retrospect.
Nice. Probably not. Nice. Lovely, lovely. So you then transitioned into self-employment. So what were you doing then? Is that the same as you do now, or was this part of a longer ongoing journey?
So the first thing I did, because all of my employed life really was in marketing, communications, PR, so I set myself, and my freelancing role was for marketing. My freelancing role was actually the guy I used to work for in the insurance company. He set up his own agency in London, and I freelanced for him. So he was the marketing director of the insurance company, so I then went to work for him as a freelancer. So that was all marketing. At that stage, it was still marketing within the insurance industry. And then as I took on more clients, it was in marketing initially for other insurance clients, but then for different people. So marketing consultancy was kind of what my business was. My first company was called Lime 23. In fact, if you go on my LinkedIn, it probably still says that somewhere, Lime 23, because lime is my favourite colour and fruit, and 23 is where I live. Then I became my marketing team, because I thought that does what it says on the tin. But yeah, anyway, it was all there. It was all marketing related.
Ah, gotcha. Nice. So where did that all lead then? Where did that all lead? Where does that bring us to now?
So I, being in marketing, one would think that setting yourself up in business, you would know exactly how to market yourself and get a shed load of clients, wouldn't you? The truth is, my marketing experience, certainly with the company I work for, was spending somebody else's millions of pounds on marketing, kind of a little bit different than having no money to market yourself. It's kind of always easier marketing someone else than yourself. So
so true with everything, isn't it? It's always so much easier doing it for others, helping others to do their stuff, telling others what to do. But when we have to do it ourselves, it's like,
I know. Yeah, kind of cringy.
Yeah.
So I signed up to a business, an online business forum. It's called UK Business Forums, actually. I don't even know if it still exists. And I used to engage on there. And I must have asked the question, what does anyone recommend? And somebody put, oh, you should try networking. networking was something that I used to do with the insurance company, which, and we're so dull, those events, and everyone was booted and booted and talked about insurance.
Oh, yes.
God, I don't want to do that. Anyway, somebody then said, oh, you should try this this organization called 4N, which is short for 4 Networking. So I Googled it. I found that there was apparently a brand new group launching just down the road from me, or a couple of roads from me. So I signed up. And I got a phone call from somebody who was going to be running that group saying, oh, we see you've signed up to this. Would you like to come along? I thought, yeah, I'll come along. Went along to that launch. There was a guy at the desk, at the welcome desk, shaved head, jeans and a T-shirt. And that wasn't networking, because I was used to networking in London with insurance people. It's like, is networking really? This guy from Salford? anyway, he was signing everybody in. But it was quite friendly. Everyone there was quite friendly. We sat down. We all had to do 40-second pitches, which scared the bejeebers out of me. but I did that. And then this same shaved-headed guy did a talk holding a pizza box. And that talk just blew me away. And that guy is a guy called Brad Burton, who was actually, I didn't know that at the time, but he was the founder of 4 Networking. And he did the talk, and it was so inspirational. He was talking basically to me, as far as I was concerned, to the person that was just getting into business, didn't know what to do, and it was just brilliant. And I was lucky enough to get a one-to-one with Brad that day. He said, are you going to join? I said, no, I can't afford to join. And he said, you can't afford not to join. And he was absolutely right. So I did. I paid with money that I didn't have. But I was lucky enough that I was able to make up that money within probably the first month because of following advice that he gave me. So I started my networking journey then with 4N as a marketing consultant. But I very quickly, I had my corporate hat on when I joined 4N, and I was expecting to charge the rates that I was being charged out at in the London agency. But I very quickly refined my products and services to what was realistic for the demographic that I was going to be networking with. So I learned so much very quickly from Brad and from fellow networkers.
I got it. Yeah. And you're so right about Brad. There's so much stuff that we can learn from him. In fact, so much so I've had him as a guest on the show a couple of times. So there's, and each time there's more bits that come out. You know, oh, I should apply that. Beautiful. Yeah. So you started networking, and I presume that built your brand and your company up. And where did things go from there?
So, and it didn't just build my company and my brand up. It built so many skills. It built my confidence. I got on the team. So most networking groups actually are run by members. So I got on a team straight away. I grabbed every opportunity to deliver talks and stuff like that. So it just built me, basically, far more probably than it built my business. That was almost secondary. So as I said, I kind of tweaked what I offered and changed things. And then the next kind of significant thing that happened was a one-to-one as part of a networking group. I remember the venue, it was Red Hot World Buffet, I think it was called, in City Centre, Manchester. It's one of those. I love food. I love my food, and I've got a massive appetite. I'm only little, but I've got a massive appetite. It's one of those places that's got food from every corner of the world, and you can
like World Buffet plate. Sort of thing. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, those rock. Those really do rock.
They really do rock. Sadly, that doesn't exist anymore. But I used to go to those meetings just for the food. Anyway, I also happened to have a one-to-one with a lady called Alex. We were just chatting, as you do, about, where do you live? I live in Warrington. And she said, I'm just signed up to do this random thing in Warrington. She lived a little bit out of Warrington. I said, what's that? She said, doing a learn to row course. Right. And at that period of my life, I tried to learn something new every year. So all kinds of stuff. I've learned Spanish, I've learned salsa dancing, all kinds of random stuff. And I thought, that could be my thing for this year. This was in December 2014. because I used to think rowing was for really posh people in Oxford and Cambridge.
Of course, yes.
Well, that's what rowing was. So I didn't think you could learn as an old person, you know, 5 foot four and a half. A very important half, you know, not just 5 foot four.
Very important. Yeah. Makes all the difference.
It certainly does. So I signed up to that Learn to Row course. It was started in the February. And there's something about it. I still didn't really know anything about it, but I'd gone away for the weekend to Northampton, I think, for a university friend reunion. So that's like Friday, Saturday night, big party, lots of drinking on the Saturday night. And for me to get to the Learn to Row on the Sunday, I had to get up at 5 a.m., bearing in mind I've been with UniFriend, but there's something in me that thought, no, I'm going to do it. And I did. I got up at 5 o'clock. I didn't even see my friends that morning. That I told them the night before that's what I was doing. Yeah. And I went and I literally fell in love with the sport of rowing from that very first lesson. So I got a hobby, which I absolutely adore. But also I enjoyed the Learn to Row course so much that the next Learn to Row course at the club ran, I then helped out. Mm-hmm. And just by getting more and more involved, I ended up taking my British Rowing coaching qualification, which I have, and started coaching at the club. And the lady that taught me how to row, a lady called Jill, she and I decided to start a business doing team building events for companies and organisations involving rowing. So that's how Always Awesome, spelled O-A-R-S-O-M-E, was born. So that became my primary business then, from then, really.
Beautiful, lovely. And it all just came about because of a random connection that you made at a network meeting.
Absolutely,
yeah. And I know rowing is now a very strong passion of yours, rowing and business, two great passions of yours. I know you have a talk that you sometimes do at network events, which shares some of the lessons that you learn from rowing and how they apply to business. It is a fascinating one. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to chat a little bit about that in a bonus section for my Patreons. Don't tell anyone else; it's for the Patreons only. So hopefully, we'll talk about that a little bit separately. And if you are a Patreon, you'll be able to catch that after this episode. If you're not, well, go to Patreon, find out what it's about, sign up, and find out more about how what rowing has to do with business. There is a lot to learn from there, but. Continuing to back to Jen and your amazing journey. So you were an active member in Four Networking. You were on the team. You were doing really well with that. You created your own business. Awesome, your awesome business. And what was it? You've then gone on to do more with networking. So with One Networking, we've mentioned it before. One Networking, another. Yep. One Networking. How did that come about?
Well, let me tell you. So back in 2020, there was this thing that you may have heard of called COVID that landed on all of our doorsteps. It was a terrible thing for many people, and of course, there's awful things came from it. But you know what? Some good came from it in some respects as well. And I would say One Networking is one of those. So basically, when everything went into lockdown in March, wasn't it? March the 20-something, I think it was. So I was a regional leader for Four Networking, and Four Networking at that time was running 5,000 face-to-face events every single year. And on the 20-whatever of March, it was running zero networking events because we weren't allowed to. So basically, it ceased to exist temporarily because it couldn't exist. So, of course, we couldn't let it cease to exist because it had many members, including myself, that really, really needed it, probably more than ever then, actually. So within about 48 hours, a team of us got our heads together. How can we make this work in lockdown? And then thanks to an amazing group of regional leaders, the following week, literally, we put on, I can't remember how many now, but I bet there were five meetings a day, online meetings.
It was something like that, wasn't it? It was really packed, yeah. A good 20 or 30 meetings a week, all online.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you know what? It was wonderful. It was wonderful from a The people I was working with to make that happen, it was an, you know, so obviously Brad and Terry, the chairman, Pippa Whitfield, or that was before she was married. I can't actually remember what her surname was.
Used to be Hodge. Pippa Hodge.
Hodge, that's it. Yeah, Hodge. So, yeah. She got married in London. Anyway, that's another story. and Stacey Calder and Anna Fox Neal. Basically, we worked together from 6 a.m. till like gone midnight every single day just to make this happen. And it was an amazing time, but also it created an amazing thing for business owners that were kind of like, well, what on earth do we do now? So that was great. And what it also gave us was the opportunity to create events that weren't just geographically based because it was online. Yeah. So that was wonderful. It meant that people from the far reaches of the UK could join us, Keith. Hurrah! Yeah. Genuinely, oh, yes. I mean, imagine if it was.
Yeah, it made a huge difference. That was how I was able to get so much more involved with the network.
Definitely, so we used to try things. We used to have themed meetings, and just we'd often put out there, "Who's got an idea for a meeting? Tell us about it, and let's make it happen."
Yeah.
One of those ideas for a meeting was, why don't we try a single seat meeting? So single seat meaning that with four networking, it's very open. Anybody can attend any meeting, and it could be that you're the only accountant in the room, or you could be one of five accountants in the room, and it's fine because it's about collaboration and, you know, people choosing, and that's wonderful. Single seat networks also exist, and they're also wonderful. They're just different. It just means that you can only have one person in each business, so you become the one.
See what you did there.
in that group. So it was Matt Richardson, actually, who suggested, why don't we try a single seat? So we said, yeah, let's do it. So we did a six-week trial. It was massively oversubscribed. bear in mind, we could only have one person per person. Anyway, we put it on. It was quite a basic meeting, but there was just one person per seat. But it was a tremendous success. And we thought, do you know what? We could do this. And single seat networking has been something that Brad has kind of had in the back of his mind for a few years, thinking, shall we, shan't we? But we did that. It was a great success. So in October, that was end of July, in the October of 2020, we said, let's do it properly. So we launched five groups. And I was asked, by the way, to head it up. So actually, rewind a little bit. So when we went online, obviously my business, which was doing team building days on the River Mersey, had to stop. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky enough to be invited on the management team of Four Networking.
Right.
So I was already on the management team of Four Networking. So then when we did One Networking, I was asked, would I head that up? So I did. It was weird, actually. I did, but I was kind of hesitant because I was so Four Networking. I'd been in Four Networking for like 12 years. And the thought of going to single seat was kind of like, whoa, that's weird.
Yeah.
We'd created something that worked, and there was a great team of people there, including yourself from the beginning. So I thought, well, yeah, I'd happily try and make this work for our members. So I did, and we did. We created five groups, as I say, in the first week, and then we've just grown it from there. And then I fell in love with the network, actually. I fell in love with the network. I fell in love with members who are brilliant. We've got a great group. It seems to attract really positive, upbeat people, which is wonderful. The teams that run it are amazing. So I've been involved with One Networking ever since.
And to quote Victor Kayam, you liked it so much, you bought the business.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that bit. So back in earlier this month, actually, well, about a month ago, because it really wasn't it wasn't over a long time scale, but Brad decided the time has come. He'd been thinking about it for a while. Things kept cropping up, like global pandemics.
Yes.
So he's been thinking that stepping back from networking was right for him because he's got loads of other amazing things that he's involved in. So Brad Burton business, his speaking career and things like that. So it's difficult to put proper focus on one thing when you're involved in so many things. and 4N have stopped being just 4N. It was 4N face to face, it's 4N online, there's 1N. So he was being more diluted, I guess.
Yes.
So he made the, he'd been thinking about doing it, but then, as I say, things kept cropping up that meant he felt he couldn't step away. But then in July, he decided that was the time. And he approached myself and Caroline Andrew Johnson to see if we would be interested in taking on his part of 4N and 1N respectively. So 1N with me, 4N with Caroline. And we both said, oh, yeah, go on then.
Oh, go on.
And I think the thing is, we're both really invested in the organisations and what they do and, you know, the values of them that I don't think either of us could have ever considered stepping away from the organisation. So.
Exactly. Yeah, and that brings us up to date with Jen as things are now. And I know you have a lot of exciting plans for One Networking for the future. Can't wait to see what transpires. It's going to be awesome.
It is going to be awesome with an O and an A and an R and an S and an O M E, of course.
Certainly is. Love it. I mean, we could talk for hours, and we often have in the past, but unfortunately, time is marching ever onwards. If you want to find out more and maybe even get in touch with you, what's the best place? What's the best place for them to get in touch?
So I hang out here, there, and everywhere. But the best website to go to is onenetworking.biz. And my email address is jen@onenetworking.biz. Find me on LinkedIn as Jen Hines, because that's my name. That's
there you go.
Yeah, onenetworking.biz is kind of
the place. Yes, I mean, Jen, she said she's everywhere, and I'll pop the links to some of her profiles in the show notes for this, which, as always, you can find at keithblakemannoble.com/show. Look for The One with Jen Hines. You'll find all the links and so on there. But if you want to check her out, go to onenetworking.biz. And yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jen. It's been an absolute pleasure to find out a little bit more about your journey. I can't imagine the young Jen who was the au pair for that unpleasant family. I can't imagine she would have thought she'd be owning and running a massive networking organization.
I know, right? It's bonkers.
Yeah, amazing how things turn out. Well, thank you so much, Jen, for taking time out for us to do this episode. Now we finally managed to get some time that schedules to meet. And thank you, dear listener, dear viewer. Thank you for catching it. Hope you've enjoyed it. Do give us a like, a comment, subscribe, and check out onenetworking.biz to find out more about Jen. Check out keithblakemannoble.com/show to find out more of the episodes. And we will catch you next week. Jen and I are just off to record some bonus Patreon exclusive content, but I will leave you with Jen's favorite quote. It's a quote from a gentleman who's been a guest on the show a couple of times, and we've mentioned him in this episode, from Brad Burton. And it's a great quote whenever things are going wrong. What does this make possible? There is, of course, bonus content for all my Patreons. If you head over to Patreon now, you'll be able to catch the bonus episode which Jen and I recorded, where Jen shared several really interesting business tips which you can get from rowing. It's worth checking out. If you're not already a Patreon supporter, go to keithbn.link/Patreon, capital P, PATREON, where you can sign up and get instant access.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.